Hello, welcome to episode 4F20, the Simpsons spin-off showcase, original air date May 11th, 1997. I'm Josh Weinstein, executive producer, showrunner.
I'm Ken Keeler. I came up with the story for this episode.
This is David Cohen. I wrote the, Chief Wiggum PI, based on Ken Keeler's idea.
This is Yardley Smith. I'm the voice of Lisa Simpson. I have one line in this whole episode.
This is Dan Graney. I wrote the first draft of the Lovematic Grandpa script.
This is Matt Groening, and I was nervous and opposed to this episode.
So say why.
Because I thought it was too crazy and breaking the fourth wall and violating our rules and all that, but it turned out great.
So you were proven right?
What?
You were proven...
I'm still very nervous, and I'll reveal why later on. No.
But an interesting thing is, I think anytime something new, it's like us too, we'd be afraid of like, well, we hadn't done this before, and it's breaking a wall. But then, in general, people outside don't seem to be as concerned about that.
Well, and didn't you find, I mean, this episode is very inside, and those are always risky, but didn't you, wasn't it a confirmation that the fans follow this show like
well,
to the
as,
letter?
And as a matter of fact, we talked many years later about doing an actual spinoff of the show. One version of it was called Springfield Stories, which we're going to explore various of the secondary
right, that
characters.
Was like 22 Birthdays was sort of the prototype for it. It still would be a good idea. But so, Ken, you want to talk about this and how the idea came up? And also, we should probably explain the idea of spinoffs and all these sort of hacky conventions employed, so you don't think we're hacky.
Right. I presume the average television viewer is familiar with the concept of a spinoff, which is, as Troy explains, you take a successful show and make an unsuccessful one out of it. I remember, I mean, this was very gratifying because it was just the one sentence idea, let's do spinoffs, sort of came to me and I came in and said it to you guys. And my recollection was that it just seemed like immediately, boy, that's an idea that certainly ought to work pretty well. And then it was a question of putting them all into place.
And you'll see in each little segment, there are certain spin-off conventions that everyone always insists you must have for a spin-off. For example, The Simpsons, the family that generated it, have to appear in every segment in some cameo. That's a typical convention. There's also, like in here, there's a huge long explanation between Wiggum and Skinner about why the hell they're in New Orleans and why Skinner is like this tough guy and blah,
yeah, so
blah, blah.
I love how Skinner says... New Orleans the first time, but then he throws the towel and just says New Orleans after within about 20 seconds later.
We don't have the director with us, but it's worth pointing out that they did a very good job actually imitating the way these shows are shot. This genre of show would be an hour-long cop show, and it's not shot like The Simpsons. It's not directed like it. The sitcom, the three-camera sitcom that's coming up, is, if you watch it, completely different than the way an ordinary Simpsons would look.
Like so many juggling balls. Two, I suppose.
Daddy, these rubber pants are hot.
You wear them until you learn, son.
So when you have three different stories in this one episode, does one writer take...
Look at the tires are flat.
...each story or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes?
Because I did the first draft of this particular one, so I can tell you yes. But I didn't do the first draft of the other two.
That was Paul Prudhomme, based on Paul Prudhomme.
I never noticed that the tires were actually flattening as you
were driving. Interesting, because Dan Graney is here. You'll notice Paul Prudhomme's very large man's floppy white hat, which Homer wore in 300 Pound Homer, because very large men like to wear loose-fitting things, and a hat sort of distracts you from the bottom.
Now, I wrote this, but I have to ask, is this a parody of the movie The Big Easy? Or I don't remember because it's been so long since I saw that movie.
My recollection is there's no direct parody elements in it.
Okay. Except it's in all.
Because we got the actor Gaylord Sartain to appear in this episode, and he was in The Big Easy.
I think it was only because what actor is from New Orleans?
He's associated with Cajun.
Yeah, and also because he was real funny.
This is one of those things like whenever we see Ned Flanders. Out of his element, we find out he's incredibly muscular and well-built, and it's fun to see Skinner wrestling an alligator without really any qualms or
Well, we explain problem. How he really was a tough guy from the streets.
There again, that's another warning gator. Cop show convention.
The phrase of warning gator is fabulous. It must be you, Ken.
That's a No. No, I wish I could say it was.
Then, listen, you and I'll say it was me.
I don't remember the origin of it.
Okay, it's yours.
I do know another line that you're likely to enjoy, Dan, was David's, which is when someone is swimming away. Oh.
Return right now.
There again. That's one of those typical Quinn Martin bumpers, but there was no commercial to put there.
Now you listen up, mon ami, and you listen good, yeah? The name is Daddy. Charles Daddy.
Big Daddy, what are you doing with my boy, Daddy?
The boy is fine, so far. I taught him to play the spoon.
So, is that...
That's Gaylord Sertain.
Gaylord Sertain.
Which is sort of based on Dr. John, who's a famous New Orleans singer guy.
Was he actually consciously doing a voice pattern on Dr. John? Or?
That's, I'm not sure. You know, I think we actually tried to get Dr. John, but he was too busy partying or something. He was asleep or something.
You but, mean Dr. John the Night Tripper?
Now look at that. That's beautiful animation.
There might be others.
It's interesting how Principal Skinner still is kind of himself. Like he, even though in the context of the show he's from New Orleans, he doesn't know what Mardi Gras is.
The squarest person ever to come from New Orleans.
That laugh, by the way, was not my one line in this episode.
But congratulations, you've now had more lines in this commentary than in the episode.
Indeed.
Everybody get ready.
Chief Wiggum, I can't wait to hear about all the exciting, sexy adventures you're sure to have against this colorful backdrop.
Yay!
Thank you.
To add insult to insult, the joke of the third segment, one of the jokes is that the part of Lisa has been recast, where you could have had scores of lines.
That was a nervous day for me. And I think it's Pamela Hayden, who does the voice of Milhouse, ends up doing the voice of Lisa Simpson on that spin-off, which is the third segment.
This is a very Miami Vice-y sequence.
There's a really subtle joke here, because that's a New Orleans policeman, and he kicks him off the boat to say, because it's police business.
I never noticed that. Are you sure that was intentional?
I think sure it looks
there's
like
a fine line between subtle and unfunny.
Well, you know, that's the thing about this episode. It's when you're making fun of something that is bad, it's really hard not to just seem bad.
Yes. That was where my nervousness came in.
And I would say in this episode goes back and forth between being really funny and then sometimes erring on that side.
I love his house in the middle of the river.
It's the governor's mansion. It was stolen 8 months ago, and they just discovered it.
And I believe that's the real flag of Louisiana.
Yo. I'm familiar with, like, kind of the James Bond take on New Orleans, but not the Miami Vice take on New Orleans.
This was like a conglomeration that the writers of the spinoff thought would be a good...
They didn't hold anything back in this flavorful gumbo.
Now, I think on the internet, it's about half and half about how people either really love this episode and get it, but some people don't, and I wonder if those people, like when they were kids watching it, didn't understand we were making a joke about bad things and just thought, anyway.
This is the line.
Uh-oh.
He's gradually getting away.
I thought Dan would enjoy it. I did enjoy it. David's.
Now,
I love how slowly he's swimming away in the back.
Apparently, I looked this up on the internet yesterday just to do my research before the commentary for 5 minutes, but the one thing I saw is someone commented on that line and said it was extremely similar to another line in an earlier episode of The Simpsons where it was like, I don't remember the exact line, but if you go research the internet,
Apparently, I stole
the general concept of that joke unintentionally, so no credit to me.
Now, you'll notice we're going back to the Jeffersons because we couldn't think of enough spin-offs that people knew of, so we're only a few on the wall.
I was wondering why there's so much blank wall space that was perfect.
We gave up because we were like, we can't.
You saw Rhoda was on there earlier, which featured Julie Kavner.
Now, this is a very, very strange parody to me, because it starts out as a high-concept sitcom, but then there's all sorts of behavior in it, and I'm looking at Dan as I'm saying this, and that
I don't really remember how this whole thing happened.
I don't, because it's like, the opening sequence is like I Dream of Jeannie or Bewitched type thing, so I guess it's supposed to be like one of those magical...
Right, and the laugh track, we knew it was filmed in front of an audience, and so the timing of the jokes is different, the type
and
of, you know,
just the presence of a laugh track. Is really startling.
As your love testing machine, I'm the love.
And this was written by Steve Tompkins, who's not here.
No, this was written by me.
This was written by you?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I don't really remember.
I was talking to him.
That's why he's talking to me.
Well, Steve, stop trying to hog the credits.
I've always
Steve.
Been a little. This is, I love these credits.
Yeah, this is the theme song that completely explains the premise, the rather elaborate premise.
Right, that's also a nature of spinoffs. Yep. You've got to explain what's going on.
I have to say this was so room written. So many other people's ideas in here. I somehow got a check for this thing, but I never cashed it. I felt so bad.
Actually, less than that.
Be afraid, Mo. I'm here to help you with your romantic problems.
Hey, I don't need no advice from no pinball machine.
Well, this is partly inspired by my mother, the car, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, which...
Oh, that's right, because she came back as...
A 1928 Porter.
And who wrote for that show?
That's right, who wrote an episode?
Yes, many episodes.
Oh, many?
Many.
Does anybody know?
Yes. J.L.B. are the initials, right? Am I right?
Yes.
Who's that?
James L. Brooks.
I believe it was his first job. I hope I'm not speaking
fantastic.
At
it. We're really parceling out the information in the commentary.
Well, I'm very nervous.
James L. Brooks wrote for my mother the car.
What?
James L. Brooks wrote for my mother the car. I'll say it.
That's right.
You're fired.
You didn't follow the 3-stage info release rules.
I saw an episode he wrote. It was very much about the relationship of the mother and the son. That sounds stupid when you say it.
Okay,
but it was...
so I saw the show when I was a kid. I'm old enough to remember it, and I hated it as a kid. I was excited by the idea. Oh my God, it's a talking car! I was really happy about that. And it was on one of those TV Land or something. They, you know, many years later, and I just watched it again. And I literally made it as far into the show as I did back in 1964.
Really?
Okay.
Three minutes.
I can say I've seen several complete episodes. It's a competent sitcom with moments of being pretty good.
Okay. There you go. You're rehired.
out to dinner at a fancy French restaurant.
This is Tress as the woman.
Right. And I like it because it sort of looks like Tress.
I do think I wrote that line. Maybe. Possibly. A draft of what used to be there.
See, now that audience track is so true when you do half-hour sitcoms and there's anything racy, the audience, they're like a part of the show then. They do the woos.
And, but actually, the laugh
look at that. Look at
the
camera. Mo plagued the camera.
Yes, which, now that doesn't happen in a real sitcom.
No, that
almost ever.
Happen.
I don't know where that
happened. The only time I could account for that show. But say back to about the laugh tracks. There's a laugh track guy in real sitcoms who actually has those sounds like, woo, and even like, oh no, don't go there. It's all in a little machine.
Now, you would never see this on a 1960s sitcom. You would never see a scene shot in a bathroom. You just couldn't
right.
do
well,
it.
You would, but there'd be no urinals.
Right. You're right. You're right. But
there's
you certainly
a line
would...
later on when we come back to the bathrooms is one of my favorite lines. I was stupid. I got
you. It hasn't happened yet.
No. But.
Good. Now Dan is parceling out the information at the approved rate.
I've suffered so long. Why can't I die? Said by a man as a love tester in a bathroom in a tuxedo while advising a bartender on maneuvering his way through a date. It's a pretty good situation.
It could have run for years.
I got the runs. Get away from that. Leave him alone.
It said I was gay.
The audience, the 60s audience.
Who directed the audience? Do you remember? We must have gotten those from somewhere, right?
Why did he put it in
a
tuxedo?
I think Travis had them.
Oh.
And a sound file.
They were all on file? Wow.
Yeah, they have every single... thing you want.
Who was he hoping to fool with this tuxedo?
But that's a sitcom. Nobody will notice.
You are absolutely, positively, the dumbest haunted love tester I have ever met.
What is going on in here?
It does help to have the laugh track because otherwise it wouldn't seem as funny. Yes?
You might lose the parody aspect
that's
of it.
That's right. You want to get one
off any moment.
Parody.
Keep your eye on the snail.
And I really wanted to do ya. Yes. Nobody would ever say that in a sitcom. That's the one that's always stood out to me. It's not a genre parody. It's a good line.
It's even a little beyond the pale of what normally flies on The Simpsons.
Here's the thing. Other people conceived this episode as a genre parody. I'm not really that familiar with the genre, so I just wrote my own thing, and then other people made it into this genre thing that I don't really understand.
Thanks, Grandpa.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how's about introducing me to that cute little payphone out front?
I guess that's one thing all comedies and dramas of this era had in common, is that they would end on a light joke, no matter how many murders had just taken place.
Right, with the main characters enjoying it as much as the audience. Indeed.
That Roman numeral is gibberish, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it'd be like, it's like the year 40,000 or something.
I'm talking with the curator of the Museum of TV and Television, Mr. John Winslow.
I love that.
I remember thinking, that was a joke I was surprised I'd never seen before. Where he says he's talking to somebody and then just gets up. It's simple and elegant, and it seems like it should have been found before.
Casting, you won't even notice. Show us what you got.
Now, this, of course, is based on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Right, which was one of those...
And this is Laugh-In.
Right, and that's Laugh-In, the announcer, Gary, based on Gary Owens.
And this script was written by Steve Tompkins.
I was also parceling that information out slowly and well.
We wanted
advanced.
To get the audience ready for that.
Now, I may be out on a limb here, but the thing that has struck me about this segment, in which it's clear that the family, they are a family, but they were acting in a show called The Simpsons and later went on to do something else, another TV show, different than the show called The Simpsons, is it seems to me to contain basically the entire premise of a show that the Simpsons did 4 or 5 years later, the Behind the Laughter show, which was an Emmy winner and a wonderfully written show, but it seems like to me the entire premise is implicit in this one.
Well, one of the reasons why I was nervous about this episode and that episode you alluded to is that I did not want I didn't want to open up the idea that they were actors, that the cartoon characters were actors, like sometimes Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck were living in Hollywood and stuff like that. I just felt it had been done, and I just like the idea that we maintain the reality. That's all.
Has it been broken again, other than this and that?
Well, the same solution, but really the two episodes use the same solution, of having to be a family that played a family.
Right.
So that solution to Matt's concern that they not be, that we disestablish them as a family.
Well, it's a very easy joke to make, to have the Simpsons suddenly being aware of themselves as celebrities, and it's something we avoided pretty much in what we did, and so this actually goes the other way. But this was very funny.
Now, I also say the replacement of Lisa is based on the actual Brady Bunch Variety Hour. I believe that was the one where the actress who played Jan didn't want to be in it, and
that's
so she
right.
was replaced, but no mention was made of the fact that she
was replaced with Jerry Reichel. I have the information right here in front of me. Who now has a big following. It seems like a real, like, genuine following on the internet as Fake Jan.
I believe that logo is a parody of
Sonny and Cher.
Yep.
And this, of course, is a parody of a very bad sketch.
I think it's good.
Which they used to do these very bad sketches on Sonny and Cher, where they would wear the silly costumes and...
Is that right? I was just trying to think. I could not recall offhand seeing a sketch of this type, but Sonny and Cher would.
Yeah, I
imagine that the Sonny Comedy Hour, those brief 6 weeks where he was without Cher, actually might have had a lot of costume work.
That's right. I like that Lisa's like 17. They recast her as a voluptuous teenager.
Okay. Now, before my boss comes, if something important...
That's also a hoary old convention of a person's boss coming to dinner that you still see in sitcoms.
That's very Bewitched, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was it something I said?
Gar!
And is that Tim Conway?
Yes. Now, Bill's not here today, but he directed Tim Conway, and he said he was really great, like a really friendly, nice guy.
I love Tim Conway.
Yeah.
I love Tim Conway. I used to stay up late to watch the Carol Burnett Show when I was a kid. I couldn't get enough of it.
War atrocities? How are we supposed to do our big musical number with so many problems in the world?
I remember there was a lot of discussion. Does anyone remember whose idea it was to have the musical number about candy?
I would think Tompkins. All feels very Tompkins.
It does.
To me.
It does, but I have a vague recollection of Tompkins saying, boy, that was a great idea, implying that it was due to somebody else.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
I want candy. Or save the endangered Alaskan salmon. I want candy.
Well, if you won't think of society's ills,
I want candy.
Hearing
again, I'm not positive this is actually is a parody of anything specific for the time, but it sure seemed like it ought to be.
It's a bunch of things thrown together to show how cruddy these shows were.
This is head-exploding TV.
Pretty good.
It is. This animation is really good, I will say.
This really makes me laugh, but I don't know why. I feel a little embarrassed.
If you weren't watching, it would be almost impossible to explain what's going on.
Now, this, I will explain this. This is Devo were the early pioneers of video. In fact, they did videos before MTV even existed. And this is almost a direct parody of the Devo video for Whip It, which is actually really suggestive and weird. And including that part, it's all based on the real video.
We want candy.
And they sort of dressed like Happy Days.
And then Devo, years later, did Swiffer commercials with the same song, Swiff It.
Uh-huh.
Swiff It Good. Yeah.
A poem by Hans Moleman.
Now, this is based on Laugh-In, when Henry Gibson, the comedic actor, would always do a little poem.
And they thought I stunk.
Good night.
And with our special guest, Jim Conway.
So this was a real stew of different shows, wasn't it?
Spring for a decent hotel room.
He's just kidding. We'd like to thank Fox and the good people at Budget Watch.
Well, that's all the time we have.
Again, I don't think on these variety shows anyone ever actually verbally thanked a sponsor in the 70s.
Maybe on the 70s. They certainly did in the 50s.
Yeah, no question. But I think it was gone. But
right. Well, first it started people smoking cigarettes and saying, I love this Bel Air smoke. Then it ended up with just like brought to you by.
That's it for our spin-off showcase.
What I was remembering earlier is the character who's about to appear here, which we might want to try to explain in advance because there's not going to be a lot of time after he comes on the screen.
Asmodeo.
Go ahead.
Anyone else?
The parody of that Martian on the Flintstones,
right? The Great
right?
Kazoo.
That's right.
Yes.
Kazoo.
Who was even the Flintstones, they forced them or they wanted to introduce a new character from the future.
That's reminds
right.
me of the episode The Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie Show from this season.
Now, my recollection is we actually created Asmodeo in the room and put him in an earlier script, a straight script, and then said this is too crazy. But then when this show was available, he seemed to fit right in.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he isn't in the show yet.
I guess I'm still nervous.
Yardley, were you mad that in the credits they put your name in a slightly smaller font?
You know, I'm just glad my name was still there. Yeah, I thought maybe my job is safe.
All right. Goodbye.
No apologies?
We're sorry you were nervous.
I'm sorry for trying.
No, it's just like a very meek, mild little ending to this commentary.
Goodbye!